6, Senate Resource Committee order. It's 3:31, we almost made it on time today, so that's my fault. President or Senator Stedman, Senator Seekins, myself, Chair Senator Wagoner, Senator Dyson, and Senator Elton. The first order of business, we're going to finish public presentation on Senate Bill 166, Wildlife Conservation Tag, which is a bill that we were holding the hearings on last time and taking public input. We didn't have time to get through with it. I plan to hold this bill one more meeting, and so at this time we're going to take testimony from the public here in Juneau. And the first person to testify will be Sarah Gilbertson.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Gilbertson. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And Commissioner Campbell is sorry that he could not be with you today. He is on the ferry with the governor and other members of the cabinet. So, but he did ask me to come here today and express Fish and Game support for Senate Bill 166. And as many of you know, Fish and Game's budget is heavily reliant upon user fees from trappers, hunters, anglers, commercial fishermen. And the bill that you have before you, Senate Bill 166, attempts to seek user fees from another sector of both residents and non-residents who benefit from fish and game management in the state of Alaska. And Fish and Game does support Senate Bill 166. We've worked with Senator Bundy and his staff over the last week to draft some amendments, which I believe we're going to discuss today. And what we tried to do is to tighten up the bill and basically clarify who would be responsible for selling these tags and who would be responsible for buying these tags. And so that's at the heart of the amendments that we are proposing. And the one thing I did want to clarify after testimony last week is that revenues generated by this bill would be deposited into the Fish and Game Fund. And as most of you know, that's one of the only dedicated funds in the state of Alaska, and this would go into a subset of the Fish and Game Fund, and the revenues would be used for fish and wildlife management. So with that, I don't know if you want me to walk through some of the proposed amendments.
Would you please?
Sure.
I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Senator Stevens and Senator Kukesh.
Okay. So to just briefly walk through, I believe you have a handout that is about 4 pages long. To walk through the amendments, basically the amendments required a title change, and we also exempted the Alaska Marine Highway System and Alaska Railroad Corporation based upon the comments that we heard last week from folks like Senator Stedman and Senator Elton, who were concerned about the ferry. And while we didn't necessarily and specifically exempt the Inner Island Ferry, I'll point out how they're taken care of and how they're exempted later on. We didn't mention them by name, but I believe that the changes get to the heart of what you were talking about last week. Moving down page 1, there's a drafting error that we would need to fix, but since it's not the committee's intention to move the bill today, I believe we have some time. Basically, what we tried to do on page 1, section 6, the bottom of the page there, is we did not intend to change current statute. We merely wanted to clarify that the vendors selling these tags would receive a $1 kickback for every tag that they sell. And the way that this amendment is drafted currently, it makes a change to current statute and affects all fish and game licenses. So that is not our intention. Moving to the top of page 2, these are housekeeping changes, renumbering based upon some of the changes that we're making. The bottom of page 2, we sought to clarify that this is an annual tag that that the folks who are purchasing Alaska commercial fishing permits, as well as those purchasing Alaska sport fishing and hunting licenses, would be exempt. So the language Alaska and issued by the department needed to be added to ensure that, you know, someone from Florida, for example, or another state couldn't come up here and purchase or show that they've purchased a commercial fishing license elsewhere and be exempt. At the bottom of page 2, we delete in the commercial provider or transportation industry and provides, and on the top of page 3 suggests some new language. This is targeted at making sure that an employee for one of these businesses selling the tag does not have to purchase the tag when he or she is currently on work duty.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Excuse me, just a minute.
This is making little to no sense.
The beige.
Got it.
Oh, I'm working off of a...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay.
My fault.
There you go.
So continuing on, if I may, page 5, following line 13. Oh, wait, let me back up. Page 5, line 13, delete by railroad or the Alaska Marine Highway System and insert for purposes other than an opportunity to view public wildlife. What we wanted to do here is make it very clear that a resident traveling to or from his or her home is exempt unless that person is specifically taking a tour that provides a significant opportunity to view public wildlife or advertises the opportunity to view wildlife. So there, Senator Stedman and Senator Elton, a person who was traveling on the Inter Island Ferry Agency or Authority, I'm not sure what it's called, but that person would not be required to purchase this tag. Continuing on, page 5, following line 13, we wanted to specifically state what is required of these businesses. And in doing this, we said, for the opportunity to view public wildlife, a commercial provider shall. We want to make sure that they adequately provide, that they adequately inform their customers that this tag is required. We want to make sure that they ask each customer whether he or she has this tag. And they are also required to notify prospective customers in their marketing and promotional materials. And then moving down the page, page 5, line 14, following not, we wanted to insert the word knowingly, and that language ties back to the penalty. A person may not knowingly allow a tourist to go on one of these tours without possessing this tag. So that's tied to the penalty language in this bill. Page 5, line 15, we deleted equipment or facilities. And here, we wanted to make sure that if you're walking into REI to purchase, say, a set of binoculars, that you're not required to purchase this tag. The people who purchase this tag are the people who are taking a commercial tour that either provides a significant opportunity to view public wildlife or a tour that advertises a significant opportunity to view public wildlife. Not those folks who are traveling to or from their home, not those folks buying binoculars. So we really tried to tighten the scope of this bill and make it very clear who's required to buy the tag, who's required to sell the tag. Page 5, line 18, we deleted an actual possession. We heard some concerns from folks selling the tag that he or she would be the one who gets in trouble. Well, let me put it this way. The vendors did not want to be put in the position when a tourist comes through without a tag of saying, where's your tag? And then the tourist says, I left it in my room. I'm sorry, I forgot it today. The vendor was uncomfortable. Most vendors were uncomfortable with that situation. So in this section, we deleted the words in actual possession so that if a vendor is put in that position, they do not have to require the person to show the tag. So page 5, line 19 through page 6, line 10, we deleted all of this material, all of this language, and inserted new language. And here again, we're trying to tighten up the scope of the bill, make it clearer who's required to purchase and sell these. Commercial provider for an opportunity to view public wildlife. And here we defined it as a business that provides, and here I go back to what I was saying about the significant opportunity to view or who was advertising the opportunity to view. And here, we also exempted the Alaska Railroad, the Marine Highway System, rented passenger recreational vehicles, nonstop flights listed in the Alaska Supplement to the Airman's Guide published by the FAA, or a business engaged in the carriage of persons by a method of transportation determined by the commissioner by regulation not to have a significant opportunity for viewing public wildlife. Moving on, page 6, line 11, following game. We heard a lot of concerns last week about folks who were visiting zoos, fish hatcheries. I received calls about folks who would be visiting those facilities, any kind of public or wildlife refuge. So we inserted not in captivity. And through that language, we are exempting zoos. We are exempting hatcheries, Big Game Alaska, for example. Page 6, lines 12 through 23, we deleted all of this material that refers to the transportation industry. Again, this is our attempt to clarify and clean up the bill so that it's more targeted. Finally, page 7, line 14, we changed the effective date from 2006 to 2007. And that, Mr. Chairman and Committee, concludes the four-page sheet of amendments that you have before you. I'm, again, happy to be before you today in support of this bill, and the commissioner, sorry that he could not be here, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Are there any questions on the committee? Senator Alton.
Thanks. A couple of questions, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Sarah, for presenting the changes, and I think I understood most of them, and I appreciate the fact that the chair has said that we were going to have more time to take a close look at what's coming out and what's going in. So we do have that time. But my first question is, we have flights that leave from the waterfront here in Juneau and fly out to Taku River to serve either lunch or dinner to the people. I mean, that would probably be the purpose of the flight as described by the people who provide the service. I mean, would that flight then be exempted from a tag simply because the purpose of the flight isn't to see wildlife, but the purpose of the flight is to have a smoked salmon dinner or a salmon dinner at a river lodge?
Through the chair, Senator Alton, I think that many of these flight seeing outfits would have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm not familiar with the trip that you were explaining. However, you know, there are tours that take folks out to McNeil River explicitly to view bears and wildlife. So in that case, I see those folks having to buy this tag. I'm not sure about the one that you're talking about. I guess it would depend upon what their advertisements look like, whether they are truly selling this as a wildlife tour or whether they're just taking, you know, a flight to a glacier like we talked about last week, or just to have lunch, you know. I think it would depend on a case-by-case basis.
A follow-up question to that question. Who would be in charge of making that determination? Would it be the Department of Fish and Game?
Well, I through the chair, Senator Alton, I think that this bill leaves us some leeway in that we would probably have to promulgate regulations to implement this bill. And, you know, I remember reading the language that says that the commissioner has the ability to determine who would be, I think it said exempt. But I believe that the department, that would be up to the department.
And my second question, Mr. Chair, you stated at the beginning of your testimony that the funds go into a discrete fund that mm-hmm. is used for fish and wildlife management. And I guess the obvious question is, if that is the case, I mean, we've heard arguments in the past that, well, the people who pay for management ought to be on the boards of fish and the boards of game. So I'm wondering what the position of the department would be if, in fact, the tourism industry is going to be paying for management of fish and game. Would the department be in favor of having a tourism representative on either the Board of Fish or the Board of Game or both?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, you know, I really can't speak to that. That would be a policy call both within the administration and the department and within the legislature. You know, it's probably almost every year that a bill comes before you asking to add, you know, certain representation to the Board of Fish or Board of Game. So those are very much policy calls that I certainly am, it's not up to me to make.
I just note, Mr. Chair, that the arguments we've had in the past is those who pay are the ones who get to play, and this certainly changes the paying field.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Do you have a question?
Maybe you can answer it. Is this all, are there any lands in Alaska on which this viewing permit doesn't apply?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think it's our intent and the intent of the bill sponsor that this would apply everywhere.
So that's in federal parks, native land?
Through the chair,
federal forests?
Senator Dyson, anyone taking a commercial tour that either offers the opportunity to view that wildlife or advertises the opportunity to view that wildlife, regardless of whether that tour is taking folks on state or federal land, I believe it is our intent that it applies uniformly throughout the state.
I'm sorry, that probably was clear before and I missed it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
George Reifenstein?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is George Reifenstein. I'm General Manager of the Mount Roberts Tramway, a wholly owned subsidiary of Gold Belt Incorporated. I've been a resident of Alaska for 37 years. I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify regarding this bill. This will be a logistics mess that will cause some of us to lose customers, increase labor costs, and not do anything to improve our visitors' experience. Section 4 of the bill mentions applying under written application, which causes me concern when we are moving upwards of several hundred guests an hour up the mountain here on busy days. Our guests are a mixture of independent travelers, cruise ship visitors, and Alaskans. They may be going up the mountain to learn about Native culture, to have a meal, to visit our gift shop, or to hike on the mountain. If we have to verify each guest's wildlife compliance, discuss the many exemptions, assist in making application, and so on, we will have taken what was a simple 45 to 60 second transaction and doubled or tripled that. That translates to lost customers, the need for additional sales staff, and at the end of the day, a probable economic loss to our business. For a number of years, I was a licensed assistant guide, number AA2124, and I have a pretty good understanding of the principles of consumptive use. I have benefited from the management efforts of ADF&G as harvest limits and habitat studies ensured a healthy game population. I'm having trouble understanding how these non-consumptive activities, casual or chance viewing of wildlife specifically, are generating comparable management costs. The animal, fish, or fowl that the average person sees may well be seen by tens of thousands of others throughout its life. It's a stretch to say that it's costing the state anything other than the thought that we are sharing our surroundings. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Elton?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, George, for your testimony. Do they still do the raptor viewing as part of a concession on the mountain?
It's actually just an educational outreach opportunity that the Juno Raptor Center has a aviary for a raptor up there on the mountain that people come up to see, and then as that's operated under the auspices of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that's not a charge for coming up to see that. They take donations that then help them in their efforts to rehabilitate other birds.
The concern that I have, Mr. Chair, is under the provisions, and I think under these provisions as amended, I would think that it might put the operators of the tram in an awkward position on whether or not to allow that kind of viewing to occur, because you may be then putting them in a position of offering a wildlife tour, or a tour with an opportunity to see a raptor. I mean, that's not, they don't charge for the raptor viewing, if I remember correctly, and I would hate to see that kind of an experience disappear from one of the prime tourism destinations in the state.
Senator Segan?
Just as a question, I thought that was in the proposed amendments that we looked at, not in captivity.
Right.
So wouldn't apply in that case, would it?
You know, because these raptors are, they're going to be returned to the wild, those that can be, right, eventually?
Those that can be. Some of the ones that are typically up there are, they wouldn't survive in the wild, but they're up there temporarily.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Next is Dot Wilson. Sorry about the delay.
That's okay.
You made it again.
I did, rain and all. My name's Dorothy Wilson. I've lived in Juneau since 1968. My husband and I own Coastal Helicopters, and I'm also a member of NFIB and of ATIA. When I first looked at this bill, I thought, well, it doesn't apply to me because, first of all, I'm over 60, so that's not an issue. So I wouldn't have to buy a permit personally. And the other part of it is that our company, although we do tours, we actually have are required by the Forest Service to put an interpretive sign in our office that says it is not a wildlife tour, that we have to stay 1,500 feet buffer from any known wildlife habitat, and caution them that they are not going on a wildlife tour. If you look at our brochures, it says nowhere in our brochures that we're wildlife. So I thought, okay, it doesn't apply to us. But then I reread it, and the truth is, it looks like another socket to the tourist thing to me. The supporting, sponsoring statement for it said Alaska gets $1.8 billion a year in tourist money, and yet now we want another $5 a piece from them, any way we can get it. It's like we just need more money from the tourists all the time. The governor is currently asking that we have a PR campaign to the lower 48 and let them know how really nice we are in Alaska and how much we really love everybody, and yet our greed is going to outshine that. I think we really have to look at that portion of it. I remember when Senator Bundy was talking last year, he said the average tourist would be so excited to have a tag that said they saw wildlife in Alaska that they would volunteer to buy one. And I would like to say that we would be happy to put some volunteer tags in our retail shop, and we would sell them for the state and be happy to give the state four of every $5 we collect from volunteers. So that might be an excellent opportunity to have volunteers, but I really am against the required tag. To compare hunting and fishing tags to wildlife viewing tags does not seem right. I mean, people don't always get something when they go fishing, and they don't always get something when they go hunting, but they actually hope to, and they generally either eat them or give them away. And lots of times a lot of people use the hunting and fishing to keep from going to the grocery store. So it's a useful thing. A wildlife viewing tag is not. I'd be embarrassed to tell people that they have to pay to look at our state. It makes me wonder if in another year we'll charge them to looking at the mountains and the waters and the trees. You know, maybe we'll just have them put on blindfolds when they come into the state and they'll see anything. And then, of course, to me, the idea of an Alaska resident having to pay to view any kind of wildlife is ludicrous. So I just have a hard time with that. For the large or small tour companies who fall under this bill, the collection of the verification tags will be really burdensome. It takes time to verify a tag. What if you have, you verify one, but you don't sell it, so you don't get the dollar? What about the time it takes to look at the identification of somebody to make sure they're really only 15 and a half, or that really are under 60? It's an insult if you see somebody that you think's really 60 and they're really 50. I don't know who would want to ask those questions. And then she answered the question about the passenger who forgets their tag. But still, there has to be some sort of record keeping to prove that this passenger was on the ship or said they didn't have the tag, so you've still got a record keeping thing there. And if we do charge them for a tag when they don't have one, how do we go about refunding that money to them? Some of these questions had kind of been answered by Ms. Gilbertson when she gave her testimony. Anyway, the thing is whether you have to verify a tag or sell a tag, it takes time, it takes money, it takes coordination, it takes more employees, it takes a reporting mechanism. So any way you slice it, it's going to be an additional burden on the tour operators, it's going to be another government audit that somebody has to worry about, and it's going to be cumbersome. I hope that you will not pass this bill. I think it's a burden to Alaska residents, Alaska citizens, and to Alaska businesses. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much. Next is Mike Windred.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Mike Windred. I live on 512 5th Street, just a couple blocks from the Capitol Building here. And I'm the Director of Operations for Alaska Travel Adventures. We do probably 15 day tours throughout Southeast Alaska, some Jeep tours in the interior, and motorhome trips throughout the state. And we probably handle, over the course of a summertime, about 200,000 guests or a little bit more. I apologize for my informal dress and a little bit disorganized on my speech. I just flew in from Jackson Hole this morning, so I've been putting my thoughts together for this, but it actually provided me a little bit of a unique opportunity in that while they're doing a little bit of skiing and some snowmobiling into some park areas, it gave me a few analogies for what works and what might not work as well. Certainly everybody knows that Jackson Hole is a prime elk viewing area. And when you go to a specific park there where you have a facility, then as you drive up through the gate or enter the facility, then they'll collect a fee for you to go in and see that, whether you're on a guided tour or whether you're just driving up in the car by yourself. Same thing happens in Yellowstone, where they have some specific entrance points and a pretty easy method to collect those fees from anybody who comes through, whether it's on a guided tour or just on a personal visit with yourselves. And certainly because they have a very specified region and an area, there's some specific management costs that go into that area itself. However, on a snowmobile trip that I took where we weren't in a specific park, we saw lots of wildlife, but there wasn't a specific wildlife fee involved in that. Would have been fairly hard to regulate. So it has to do a lot more with the infrastructure with that, on those things. One of the points I wanted to talk about, one of the number one things for the state of Alaska to market to visitors and bring them to the state is wildlife. That is the premier draw for Alaska. It's the premier draw for almost every single tour that operates, whether you see a lot of wildlife or whether you see just a little bit of wildlife. That's why people come here, that's why people go on excursions and get out into the backcountry of Alaska, which is why they come here to start with. I would see this bill as a disincentive to market wildlife. For the small operator who maybe doesn't see a whole lot of wildlife, if they could get around having to go through the burden of collecting these tags, and I'll go through that in a minute here, it's a disincentive to market what the state of Alaska has to offer, which is wildlife. That's why people come here, to see wildlife, hopefully out in the wilderness and not in a contained area. As a little example of what a visitor pays already to go on one of our tours, I'll use our river rafting here in Juneau as an example. A visitor on a cruise ship, say, comes in, they're going to pay a help to pay an anchor or docking fee, or local $5 head tax or visitor fee, as you call it. Then they're going to pay a sales tax on a rafting trip. They're going to pay a bus loading fee to get on the bus. Then they're going to pay a U.S. Forest Service fee that we pay a permit fee to go rafting on the river. When we get to the far end of the river, they're going to help offset the airport unloading fees. We have to take our rafts out at the far end of the river. And then we have taxes, of course, on all of our buildings and on the gas and sales tax on the supplies. And, of course, since we're a corporation, then they're helping offset our corporate sales tax that we have to pay to the state. So there already is a fairly big burden for the visitor in terms of what they pay in user fees and taxes to help fund not only the state but our local government. As far as the burden of trying to collect and administer the TAG program, I can tell you I speak from authority because I've run three sport fishing businesses as well as been a sport fishing captain myself, one of them being a lodge, one of them being a day sport fishing business out of Skagway where we were the primary provider there, and then another sport fishing business here in Juneau, a day sport fishing business. This is a much different animal than sport fishing. In sport fishing, your customer comes to your boat. You generally only have six people, because you have a six-rod limit, that are going to buy tags from you, and you have runtime on the boat to get out to your sport fishing grounds. Or even if you're going hunting, you have the ability and some time with your customer to be able to process that information, fill out the licenses, and ultimately, at the end of the year, a single boat is maybe, if you're having a good summer, you might do 1,500 people in a 150-day season. That'd be a pretty good number for a boat to be able to do. And the time is built into those types of operations to start with. No additional labor, works pretty well. For our operations and a lot of the tourism operations, the labor and the time does not exist at present. I'll use our rafting, for example. Customer gets on a bus downtown, we'll load up 53 people on a bus. They'll drive out to, and just the drivers on board the bus right now, they'll drive out to the lake, and once they're at the lake, then a person greets them, we have them do a little safety spiel, and we break them up into groups of 10 to go rafting. So somewhere along the line, we've got to collect that information, which is going to be an additional labor burden, and right now, most of that's done while they're standing out in the rain. Not a very good place to fill out these tags, or to verify them, but it has to be done. So, from some quick calculations from what I can tell you from filling out licenses, if you just use 2 minutes per tag to fill out the information, verify where they're from, that they don't have a tag, and that they go ahead and fill out the license, I'll try to make this easy and make it so that just the guide is doing their 10 people, because that would be the quickest way to do it in our operation, probably the least amount of labor. That's going to take 20 minutes additional on top of what I'm already doing, and at a very minimum wage, burdened wage of $10 an hour, which is pretty minimal burden, that's going to end up being $3.33 for labor for just those 10 people. I apologize, I should have turned that off. anyway, that works out to $3.33. For the labor for that. For those 10 licenses, we're going to collect 25 cents, which is $2.50 in revenue. Thought I had that off.
One more time.
For just a second.
You know, I had to ask you to sum up here pretty quick. We've got two more people to testify.
Okay.
We got another bill here, and we've only got another 25 minutes.
I'll sum up. By my calculations for what we do, it's going to cost us about $90,000 a year on terms of our labor to administer these tags, which doesn't flow very well for us. My estimation, that's on about 45,000 tags, so it's about a loss of $45,000 to administer this for the state. That is not a very good business plan for me. It doesn't fall within the time constraints I have for almost all of my tours. Another really good example, Gold Creek Salmon Bake here in town. There's a fish stream right beside that. We do about 80,000 people in 5 months. How am I supposed to administer tags for 80,000 people in that time frame with the labor that I have, which is a normal restaurant? it won't work. Like, it is a system doomed for failure for this. Works great for sport fishing, will not work in the visitor industry, especially with higher volume tours. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. And I apologize for the phone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, Bob Martin. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Jeremy Geiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's Geiser as in old. So, thank you. Can we just say, my name is Jeremy Geiser. I'm a resident here in Juneau. Have been for about 4 years now. Been working in the visitor industry for about 10 years. It's my first time testifying for a group of gentlemen such as yourself, so thank you for allowing me to do this. I'm a manager at a local guiding company here called Gastineau Guiding Company, and I've listened to the testimony last week and this week, and I've read the bill. Some of my thoughts, just speaking for our organization, and which is some of the things I can testify to, would be to talk about, you know, the application of this. And I know you've heard some things last week that were pretty good, and Mike over here has also pointed out some things, but let me run a couple scenarios by you. Dealing with a large group of people in a short amount of time, and if you've ever been in Juneau downtown during the middle of the summer, you've got five cruise ships in, you've got lots of buses coming in, lots of people trying to move around, you've got guided hikes, rafting, flight seeing, whale watching, zip line tours now. It just keeps coming and coming. These people only have a certain amount of time to have a quality experience. And I think the hardest thing in the visitor industry here in Juneau specifically is trying to be able to give people a quality experience when they only have, say, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours in town to do that. The way it'll work is when a larger operator has about 150 to 250 people coming off the ship to go on a tour, they're going to need to verify all those tags before they leave the dock. Because what will happen is if they get out and they don't have them, you know, you could be running into some problems there. When you've got to get all these people out of this short, out of this congested area in a short amount of time, it's pretty difficult, you know, if you add another thing in there to check. Because there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things that have to get checked. Lost and missing passes are going to have to be dealt with quite frequently, and it's going to take some time. And the way the whole time thing functions down there is there's just not a lot, you know. And what happens is it leaves the smaller operator suffering already, because we're trying to find our people and trying to get our vehicles into a small area. And when you throw something else in there, it's just going to make our tours later, which means we might have to cancel a trip or do something like that, which can happen if a ship is late or dealing with things. You know, our industry is about fixing things that go wrong for these visitors, because there's so much going on. This will be another thing that will make that very difficult. You know, what happens out on the trail if somebody finds one of our guests without a tag? You know, who assumes the responsibility for that guest? You know, we have to, you know, be with our people all the time. We can't just leave somebody out in the woods for, you know, 3 hours when we're on a hiking trip. And who's going to be responsible for that guest? Is it going to be Fish and Game? You know, and where are they going to get the money to be able to have the staff to be able to stand out there and get enforce this kind of a thing? You know, and if it's not something that's going to be enforced, is it like a speeding ticket? You know, are we just charging people to try to get this money? And is it just a targeted tax? I think the last thing I'd think about is just that, you know, we as operators here locally, even though we don't sell all our tours as wildlife tours, we're paying the department, the Forest Service, for our permits, and we're giving them monies, and that money is something that is going back into the experience for the visitors. We don't have that guarantee in this case that, you know, all these visitors, all that money is going to be going back to help contribute to their experience as well. That's about all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you very much. Okay, that concludes the testimony we had in Juneau for today. Set this bill aside.
Mr. Chairman,
Oh, I'm sorry.
Make a comment. Just a couple of things. I've put in your packet an email I've gotten from Rick Rydell. He's the dean of conservative talk shows in Anchorage, and pointing out that the tourist industry does have an impact on our fish and wildlife and supporting the mill. And interestingly enough, I got a phone call from a fellow in Minneapolis over the weekend. He's an outdoor writer, and he read an apparently AP story on this, and asked me to tell you that he'd be happy to pay an extra $5 to have a chance to view Alaska wildlife, and was grateful that I introduced the bill because he, too, is tired of hunters and anglers having to pay the whole freight. Ms. Chairman, I think some of the questions that have been raised can easily be addressed by pointing out if you don't advertise Alaska Wildlife, you're not liable for this user fee. If, however, you do advertise Alaska Wildlife, I'm surprised the tourist industry is so opposed to this. This is an industry that has come to Juneau every one of the 14 years I've been here asking for more money from the general fund to support their private business. And yet now, when they have an opportunity to allow their customers to create a return to the state, they're opposed to it. It's particularly surprising to me when, according to information that I've received, that the state general fund gets about 10 cents back for every dollar we invest in promoting tourism. Now, if they're not willing to step up the plate and help us a little bit more, I really question the advisability of our investment in their private enterprise.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, maybe you can have Senator Bundy clarify how the system would work with all these amendments and so on and so forth, in particular with the cruise ship industry. Most of them, you know, come in, they load up south of here. And when they come into southeast Alaska and then they come into the multiple towns, Ketchikan, Juneau, Sitka, and Skagway, how that would work with their particular passengers.
Now, if, as we've said, if you're just a transportation industry, then you'd be exempt. If they're going to advertise wildlife as part of the experience, then I'd expect them to be subject to this law.
Mr. Chairman, let me clarify that. Assuming that they advertise the cruise ship industry wildlife viewing, and for the life of me, I couldn't imagine why you'd want to take a vacation in southeast Alaska and not look at the wildlife, because the weather's like this more often than it's not, seems like. Anyway, then under your bill, there would be a $5 fee assessed to the passengers, a stamp given out, and then they would proceed on up through their cruise and back out, and they wouldn't have to be bothered again by going through registration lines and so on and so forth. Or how is this all? I'm not clear how it's going to work.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, it is an annual fee, and once you've paid that annual user fee, you have your little tag, and you don't pay it again. So if you're on a 72-hour tour of Alaska, or you're on a 2-week tour of Alaska, it's you only pay it once.
Senator Segan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bundy, we've been talking about tags and stamps. Just so I know, what are you envisioning? Something like a token, numbered token that person's signature and name could be on, something simple like that, rather than an application for a license like we do when we buy a hunting or fishing license?
As I envision it, it's much like our senatorial pen. You get a little cloisonné tag, you put it on your hat, you put it on your vest, you put it on your collar, put it on your backpack, and that's your proof that you've complied. I would, again, envision it. A operator says, I need X number of tags, and they're responsible for either returning those unused tags or the fees at the end of their season. there would not be a lot of paperwork involved.
And how would you propose that they just didn't have them available to hand out back and forth across other people so that it would be an individual tag? No particular identification on it?
I don't envision a particular identification. Now, perhaps there's a receipt that will come with it, but these are regulations that Fish and Game can construct. If somebody is so as crooked as a dog's hind leg that they'd have to chase to save $5, they'll probably find some other way to scam the state.
One other question, if I could.
Senator Stevens.
Earlier, we're talking about the department when Ms. Gilbertson was talking about the department being heavily reliant on money that goes into the Fish and Game Fund for management of fish and wildlife in the state from the department. Do you have any idea what percentage on the? I know you're the chair of the Fish and Game Fund or the Fish and Game budget from the fund. Do you know what percentage of the operating funds of the department come from that Fish and Game Fund now, from hunting and fishing licenses?
Well, there's very little general fund, if any, so I would say the vast majority. I don't have an exact number for you. We might be able to get that, however.
Yeah. Well, I understand it's the vast majority, and I just wondered if that was your understanding as well.
Yes, certainly is. Virtually all. Very little. It's a good budget for a senator to be a chair of, because when it comes to cutting budgets, there's little to cut. There's no general fund.
Very brief. For the record, Sarah Gilbertson with Fish and Game. I believe the vast majority of the department's funding is actually federal funds, to the tune of 40%, general fund around 20, and Fish and Game between 20 and 30%.
And a lot of the federal funds come as matching funds, Pittman Robertson, et cetera.
Correct.
Thank you.
Which originally came from hunters and anglers.
Senator Kukesh.
Thank you. I notice there's a zero fiscal note. If we're going to be paying for those little lapel buttons, I mean, I paid for one just a few minutes ago up at the Senate Legislative Affairs. It cost me $2.50. And if you're envisioning thousands of tourists coming into the state, why is it a zero fiscal note if you have to pay money to have that little tag or the little device that the tourists are going to have? I just can't see you having a zero fiscal note and having those huge amount of tourists that you have to put a tag on, mm-hmm. on their forehead or wherever you're going to put it.
Through the chair, Senator Kukesh, there's not a zero fiscal note. There's actually I wouldn't say hefty fiscal note, but one that is certainly not zero. And we did some research, and the Coissonne pins that Senator Bundy was talking about, you know, if we ordered them in bulk, we could probably do it so that it's like a duck stamp every year, that people want to collect it, people want to take it home and say, I contributed to Fish and Wildlife in Alaska. And those would probably run less than 25 cents each. Okay. So if we're charging $5, a dollar goes to the vendor and a quarter or less for the pin. This is certainly something that is manageable and would bring quite a bit of money into the Fish and Game Fund.
Thank you. Follow-up question? Second question. I'm a little bit concerned because I didn't hear anybody who testified today say they were opposed to the $5 fee. What I heard was that there were logistical problems that we have to address before we pass a bill like this that would satisfy the vendors out in the business world. I'm wondering if you are looking at the logistical problem on how we're going to solve that.
Mr. Chairman, I guess beauty's in the beholder, and you're talking about people that are doing 100,000 to 200,000 people a year. That's $100,000 and $200,000 that will add to their bottom line, and so I don't view that the logistic problems are as great as others do.
Further questions?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Close public testimony, public hearing process. We'll bring this bill up again next meeting on Monday, the 13th. And we've got one more bill to hear. We get started on it. I don't know how far we get.
House Bill 37, Public Access to Fishing Streams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
House Bill, should I proceed?
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 37 creates a process for the Department of Fish and Game to identify places in the state, stream bank areas, where the public might lose public access in the future. There are a lot of streams in the state where they're aligned with private property that nobody has developed, so people walk up and down with their kids and they fish Montana Creek, good parts of the Salcher River, the Anchor River, Deep Creek. A lot of the road system streams are lined with a lot of private property, and until somebody develops those lands, they'll remain largely publicly accessible. But as those lands get developed, we're going to lose access to some of the most popular streams along the road system. So what HB 37 says is it charges the Department of Fish and Game to identify areas that are high-use fisheries, whether they're subsistence fisheries, sport fisheries, to identify the lands, the fishing streams where we have where we might lose public access in the future as they're developed, and then to eventually in the future then buy through or land trade through to get easements and other public access along those areas. We're trying to be proactive here. A lot of states have lost their public access, and it's too expensive now for them to get it back. We want to make sure that we maintain our public access before it gets too expensive. So we've done a really good job in this state maintaining public access, and a lot of the road, especially the road system fisheries, we're probably in danger in the next decade or two decades of losing a lot of public access.
Is that it?
Yeah, I'll reserve the rest for just to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Garrett. The questions? Senator Stedman.
I got a question about on every paragraph. Reading the bill, it seems like the definition of fishing waterways could be virtually any waterway with fish in it. Is that correct or incorrect?
It could be. What the bill asks the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game to do is to prioritize those areas with the sort of greatest public value, the greatest public fishery and recreational value. Certainly the state's not going to have money to get public access everywhere, and the bill doesn't require that. The bill asks the commissioner of Fish and Game to come up with a list of about 2 meander miles, two straight miles of land statewide that it would then consider ways to purchase or land trade for public access to in the future. And then to keep things inexpensive, we say when the commissioner with public input identifies these areas, these high importance public access areas, it's not appealable by members of the public, so people don't fight back and forth about what land should have been identified. We're trying to keep the system inexpensive at the same time. But it's the highest use and the highest value areas that we're asking them to identify.
Senator Stedman.
If I could, and I know we're running late, Mr. Chairman, but on page 3, line 10, you know, it says before February 1st of each year, the commissioner and the commissioner of Fish and Game shall submit a plan to acquire public access to fishing waterways through trade or purchase. And reading through the bill, it looks to me like, depending on who happens to be sitting in those chairs, if they take a more aggressive or proactive approach to this, they could basically blanket a substantial amount of private land within the state of Alaska. In particular, I'm thinking within Southeast, that I'm more familiar with, you know, just virtually every creek has a fish in it. And it's amazing how small creeks have fish. Little ones that have been there for 1,000 years or so. You can be up 1,500 feet on a mountainside. There's fish in culverts. There's humpies in every creek. I mean, it's just, to me, depending on how aggressive this action could be, It could be very egregious.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, through the chair. We're asking them not to do that. We're asking them to prioritize the areas with the greatest fishing value. And we know the state hasn't done very much in the way of getting in purchasing or land trading for public access in the past. I'd be surprised if in the last 10 years they've purchased or traded for even 2 miles worth. So we're asking them to just find a list of about 2 miles worth of the highest value public access areas. And they would be subverting the intention of the bill if they went out and started purchasing for areas with no real fishing value, when there's so many areas that we know that we're about to lose public access in the next few decades to that have really high value. And there's no eminent domain in this bill. This bill would require voluntary land trades with landowners or voluntary land purchases. So if a landowner says, I don't want to deal with you, then the state just has to go and look somewhere else. It's a purely voluntary process that the bill sets up.
Senator Stedman?
Yeah, we know, our family knows how voluntary processes work on the squeeze out of land. And I'll give you a good example that I think your bill falls into a quagmire with. If you go down a river, which you have mentioned here, let's say there's 6 parcels, or make it easy, 5 parcels continuous running down a particular river, and 2 on each end want to sell the 2 mile access through or smaller, and the guy in the middle or gal in the middle doesn't want to. I think we're setting up a situation here where we could squeeze out private ownership. And what we've been trying to do in the state is get more land in private hands, preferably out of the federal government's hands and into the state hands, and preferably out of the state hands into the citizens' hands. So I think the way this bill is written and the way it's portrayed in some of the documents don't quite match up. But that's, I know we're running late, Mr. Chairman, and I'll let someone else ask some questions.
Additional questions? All right.
Not an additional question. I'd be interested in the response by the bill sponsor. I mean, the way that I see it, if you have several parcels of land, I mean, what we're talking about is access. We're not talking, I mean, we're talking about a trail access or maintaining public access in some way. So I may have a fundamental misunderstanding of the bill, so maybe if the sponsor could respond to the previous statement.
Senator Garrett.
Through the chair, thank you. Yeah, if you look at page 3, line 3, that addresses, I believe, Senator Stedman's concern. The right of eminent domain may not be exercised to acquire land or an interest in land under this section. This bill would not allow the state to take somebody's land. It would only allow, if you look at page 5, access through voluntary purchases or trades with the state. So it's a very legitimate concern. You wouldn't want the state to go around and start condemning people's lands for large sections of public access. But this bill does the exact opposite. It says only to the extent the landowner wishes to trade an easement, sell an easement, trade for other state property. And we wouldn't be going to the areas, hopefully, and the bill charges that you go to the areas where you don't have ample public access. The areas in Southeast, there are very few areas in Southeast. I can't think of any areas in Southeast that are crying for this solution. But in South Central and towards the interior, there are a lot of road system streams where we're going to lose public access to steelhead fishing on the Anchor River, to trout fishing on Montana Creek, to some grayling fishing on the Salcha. And those are the specific streams that are listed as the priority streams we want the Department of Fish and Game to take a look at. So it's a purely voluntary program, and it asks the Department of Fish and Game to use the factors on pages 1 and 2 to identify the places where the public values the public access the greatest. It's the greatest sport fishery attributes. The streams are the greatest sport fishery attributes that we're looking at, and subsistence attributes.
Additional questions? Senator
Stedman? One of the things we face with rivers and streams and along our shores is we have navigable waters and free access to come and go regardless of who may perceive they own it. where you're allowed, you know, free access for travel, and the definition of navigable waters is far-reaching into the interior of the state of Alaska. So there's the issue of moving up and down a river or a creek, and then there's the issue of moving along the banks. And is the distance here of virtually 2 miles beyond the meander line of the river, is that what this bill is asking for, as far as a or smaller, but they use 2 miles, is that the targeted easement distance?
We're asking the Department of Fish and Game to prioritize the most valuable 2 miles of river statewide that they can find, most valuable in terms of needed sport fishing and subsistence fishing access. They could be five different parcels. It could be one long parcel. For example, Montana Creek, there are about 3 or 4 miles of land that, once it's developed, the public won't be able to access between the Parks Highway and what's known as Yoder Road. So it could be in smaller segments, larger segments. The rivers themselves, the water itself, if it's navigable, is public, and we're not trying to address that. We're trying to address the access on the banks along the river that people would be walking up and down in order to fish with their kids or their friends.
Additional questions at this time?
Well, I think I'll wait till the next hearing.
Yeah.
We're running late.
We're going to hear this bill again Monday. And there will be public testimony taken at that time. So with that, we'll close the hearing right now, and that concludes the business for the committee of this week. The next meeting is Wednesday, the House Resources at noon in the Senate Finance to hear the Alaska Mining Association presentation. Then at 3:30 again in Senate Finance, a joint meeting with the House Resources to hear a presentation by the Alaska Minerals Commission, Division of Mining, Water, and Land. So we'll see you Monday.
Thank you very much.